Resources to order will open as a subcommittee so that we can begin some work. I'd like to open a public hearing on 576 and ask Judith if she would give us a little background, and then we'll see if there's some people here who would like to talk about this little bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 576 is sponsored by Senator Harper. The measure requires the independent multidisciplinary science team to accept input and opinions from non-member scientists with particular expertise when discussing potential official action of the team. We have received a no revenue impact and no word from fiscal yet on the measure. I just wanted to point out the members have at their seat at the dais also the IMST statutes for your easy reference. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to ask Rich Angstrom if he'd come up and talk about the bill for a minute. Rich, welcome.
Well,
glad you're here this morning.
Thank you.
Hope you're glad you're here this morning.
I'm always glad.
A pretty day outside. It's been a whole day indoors yesterday and walked out and it was 70 degrees. I didn't like that, you know.
It was raining at home this morning, I'll let you know.
Yeah, it was when I went running, too.
Well, I have the weekend to do some gardening. Hopefully the weather holds and I can actually get out and get some of the things done that are starting to backlog at the property.
You can really dig that, huh?
Well, my wife's a landscape.
Never mind.
A landscape architect. Because you're going to spend your life doing yard work. I told her I was going to testify today and that she can scroll in. I know a lot of times they can actually scroll in and listen to what's going on. So if she did, I'll be hearing about it this evening.
Uh-huh.
Well, good morning. My name's Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. OCAPA represents construction and construction material companies throughout Oregon. OCAPA has 160 members statewide, including aggregate, asphalt, and concrete producers. OCAPA has been a supporter of the Oregon Plan since its inception in 1997. OCAPA played a critical role in writing and financing the Oregon Plan through comments on drafts of the original bill and a donation of $400,000 in self-imposed dues specifically earmarked to support fish recovery. OCAPA firmly believes that the habitat renewal and creation are the keys to reviving Oregon's fish population. OCAPA representatives have sat on and chaired the Healthy Stream Partnership and participated in the Willamette Restoration Initiative and Coastal Salmon Production Restoration and Production Task Force, providing valuable expertise and acting as an accessible resource to aid fish recovery. OCAPA remains committed to the Oregon Plan and its goals of fish recovery. SB 576 is intended to improve the IMST process. What we did is we initially sent down to Legislative Council some comments or through Harper some information essentially that is a little bit different than what came out, but for good reason, and I need to go over that so some of the handouts that I've given you make sense. But essentially our initial draft was that all team meetings will be open to the public and follow Oregon public meeting laws. The independent multidisciplinary science team will make available to the public materials and drafts discussed during team meetings. Upon request from a member of the public, the independent multidisciplinary science team will disclose and release all documents, articles, etc. And then essentially the last sentence was when the independent the IMST is discussing issues it intends to make conclusions and recommendations on, the independent multidisciplinary science team will receive and consider input offered from other scientists and experts in the subject matter. The reason I wanted to read that is because one of the handouts that I gave you was a legislative council opinion on whether or not the IMST had to comply with the public meeting laws. From our experience working through it, we didn't believe that they were in fact complying with them, and so the initial bill was to clarify that. After talking with Brendan over in Legislative Council, he did that opinion and said, in fact, they are required to follow public meeting laws, including giving out drafts and things of that nature, and have to follow all of the rules that go along with it. So essentially, it made that part of what we were initially interested in the bill go away, but it did leave the part of the bill that talks about how to engage the science community at large in their determination, which is essentially what we wanted to talk about. Now, I got to tell you, I also approached this with some degree of hesitation. In discussing this issue with other state agency personnel and other folks, there was pretty much a consistent, yeah, we know there's a problem, but we don't want to be seen as anti-IMST or anti-Oregon Plan or anti-environment. And so with that, I'm on my own, but I at least have our OCAPA solid record on environmental awareness and stewardship as our currency in this discussion. We think that's pretty important, as not only being one of the helpers in authoring and moving the initial Oregon plan forward, but also all of you folks have the legislative oversight and need to hear from folks what is going on, or what our perception is going on within the IMST, to help improve the process and make the determinations that come out of the IMST better for Oregon and fish recovery. The good news is that the IMST itself agrees with our assessment that changes need to be made in the IMST process. And in the 2001 summary of the Oregon plan, the IMST has a section in here, and I'm going to just quote a section because they identify much of the problem that I'm alluding to here. And basically it says, through December 2000, the IMST made 68 specific recommendations. About 30% of those recommendations have not received a response yet. About 30% of the responses to the recommendation are too vague to determine impacts on the Oregon plan, and 6% were judged by the IMST to put achievement of the Oregon plan goals at risk. A better method is needed to ensure the IMST's recommendations are fairly, promptly, and openly considered by agencies. And we agree with that assessment. IMST reports are often either ignored by agencies or not implemented because of the impractical or costly requirements that do not necessarily comport with the current law. OCAPA believes these problems come about because of the way IMST interprets its independence. The IMST is largely self-directed, reflecting the legislative intent of achieving impartial evaluations of the Oregon Plan. However, independence and partiality do not equate to a closed process. OCAPA found the IMST process not open and engaging, and consequently the opinion they issued on gravel removal failed to be practical, failed to use the best science information available, and failed to date to elicit agency response from the agency that it was sent to. OCAPA attributes this to the IMST's own charter, and I'm going to quote that portion of that charter on confidentiality. To preserve the integrity of the functioning of the team, team members will not publicly discuss, and then in parentheses, outside of formal or informal meetings of the team, ongoing deliberations or pending discussions that concern specific conclusions and or recommendations. While any member of the team is free to publicly discuss the subjects that may come before the team, they must explicitly indicate they are not speaking as a member of the team. Draft materials of the team are to remain confidential until the team approves them for release. The team finds that the public interest, and this is important one of the more important parts here, the team finds that public interest is encouraging frank communication between team members outweighs the public interest in disclosure, and that confidentiality of draft material is generally accepted practice of independent science boards. I might editorialize there that I don't think it may be the practice of independent science boards, but I don't think it's the practice of the Oregon's open meeting laws. However, the team may use such draft materials and other materials in information and consulting with colleagues, state agencies, or for technical review, but the team is responsible for ensuring the confidentiality of the material is protected. Specifically, what was not in OCAPA situation, one of the problems was that we were not notified. Matter of fact, we wouldn't even have heard of what was going on in the IMST if it wasn't for other agencies coming in saying, hey, you better pay attention to this thing. We were told we could not have drafts to review and send to our science for comment and recommendation. This was even true while the committee discussed them and distributed them to specific members of the audience. In the case of gravel removal, the specific science of fluvial fluvial geomorphology, Linda's laughing back there because I give her a bad time about this all the time, applies. There are only a few scientists in the state of Oregon with this kind of education. To the best of my understanding, no one on the IMST has these credentials. No one in DSL has these credentials, and no one in ODFNW has these credentials. Fluvial geomorphology is a science of river hydrology and sediment and alluvium transport. And the issues around the gravel issue are all about how much sediment and how much rock is coming in coming into the system. It's really pretty much a gravel budget issue. The difficult part of my testimony at this point is that outlining these issues is what I kind of call past thinking, past experience. And I'm really not interested in what happened in the past, but I'm very interested in what is happening forward. I have to bring these things up because I have to give context and meaning to the discussion so you have a basis. It is not intended to be negative towards the IMST, but it is intended towards making a better process. I believe that the amendment or this particular bill, what it will do is require the IMST to go back, look at their own policies, look at how they can engage better and more openly the scientific community at large, and also include industry scientists in those discussions. That concludes my testimony.
Rich, I want to thank you, and we may call you back and ask some questions in a little bit, but I'm aware that the volunteer member of the IMST that's here this morning is Stan Gregory from the Fisheries and Wildlife Department at OSU, and he has to leave to teach a class by 9.
Novel idea for professor.
Yeah, it's a good thing for a professor to do. He has to leave in a little less than a half an hour. So I'm going to let him tell us a little bit about the IMST and maybe give us some initial reactions to some of your comments before we continue with the hearing. Is that okay?
With the chair's pleasure, I have a meeting at 9:30, but I can go up and do that and be back down. I may miss part of his testimony, but I'll be available for the committee.
I think you have eyes and ears in the room.
I got eyes and ears in the room.
So you're fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Dr. Gregory, thank you for driving up here this morning.
Oh, thank you, Senator.
Don't want to make you late for class.
My students will appreciate that. That's my other state job. So I appreciate this opportunity to meet with you and talk with you about the role of the IMST. I will briefly preface my comments with an explanation of how the IMST was first formed and how the charter emerged. It was.
Stan,
oh, I'm
I think
sorry.
You have to give your name for the record.
I apologize. My name is Dr. Stan Gregory. I'm co-chair of the IMST. We were formed in 1997 as a result of the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. It's a 7-member multidisciplinary team that is intended to review issues related to salmon and watersheds. We're to review the technical issues and the implications of those technical issues for policy. Right now we are 6 members. The 7th position has not been filled. We had the retirement of Dr. Logan Norris, our previous chair, and Jim Likatowicz rotated off of the team. And so one member is still vacant. When we were first formed, one of our first orders of business was to create a charter to describe exactly how we would function and to serve as a reference for us to make sure that we did handle ourselves, conduct our business appropriately and ethically. And so we consulted with the governor's Natural Resource Office and the legislature to try to make sure that we followed Oregon public meeting law. And so our charter reflects our attempt to do that. We have continued to work every year with the governor's Natural Resource Office, with the cabinet, Natural Resources Cabinet, and with the legislature to discuss the operation of the IMST and how it could be improved. So we are always willing to continue to work with the legislature and the governor's office to make sure that we serve the function the state intended. We think our independence in terms of the review is important, but we are not independent in terms of trying to serve the state. We need to work together jointly, and we're willing to. We've tried to publicly announce every meeting. We do not meet in groups of more than three if it's not being publicly recorded and hasn't been publicly announced. The Governor's Natural Resources Office has handled the announcements of all of our meetings. At every meeting, there is a time available for public comment, and admittedly, that public comment period is usually 15 to 30 minutes, but as far as I'm aware, we've never cut anyone off. And we've always welcomed either written input from any source for us to consider in our reports. And I don't know of any case in which we've ever refused to meet with anyone, an individual team member, meet with someone to make sure we gain that information. And so we do try to make ourselves available to all sources of information. If we have slipped in the past and made a mistake, I do apologize. I'm not really aware of that. But we do make that attempt. The wording of this bill, as I saw it, right now, describes the operation of the IMST. We currently receive and consider input and opinions offered by non-member scientists with expertise in fisheries, artificial propagation, stream ecology, forestry, range, watershed, and agricultural management of and or related fields. Rich's concern about draft reports and draft letters I did not see that addressed in the wording in the bill. This is an issue that we have debated continuously since we first formed. Should we release draft materials? Because these are very contentious issues, we've decided that would not be in the best interest of the state and the reports, because we do continually work on these reports and correct them. And we get input from a variety of sources, that's in public meetings that are announced and in review of any of the literature that's made available to us. We have sent our reports out for technical review and agency review. For instance, the Klamath report that we're just now finishing up it'll be finalized at next week's IMST meeting. We had 21 external reviews on that particular report. All of those are still confidential reviews, and even the names of those reviewers, because these are contentious issues, we tell them we respect their confidentiality if they don't want their name to be made public. So we do try to get external review, and we try to make it clear where we get that review, where we possibly can. And I guess at that point,
Excuse me, sir.
Oh, yes.
Even though you don't name the name of a person, you probably let it be known that you've talked to so many experts from such and such a scientific background or governmental background or whatever. You do let the public know generally where the information is coming from, if not specifically.
Right. The report will specify exactly how many reviews there were and where they were coming from in general, and we ask all reviewers, we would prefer to give their name just so that everyone knows where the review came from, but we do respect the confidentiality if they wish it, and we still want their input. We do try to make that clear. On letter reports, sometimes we have different kinds of reports that are spelled out in the charter, and so sometimes we are asked to comment on a particular action the state is taking, a particular agency or commission, and so we will review that, and then we will get a letter back to the relevant agency or legislator, and those don't go out for review in most cases unless there's a particular issue that we think there's a chance that we could be incorrect and we need clarification. As Rich said, this is not so much perhaps about the experience that he had with IMST last time, and I will be glad to continue to work with OCAPA to make sure that they have ready access to the IMST. In that review, we did work with Dogami and DSL, trying to get the most relevant information. We had civil engineers testify before the IMST, present information on gravel, and people who had written the original report that we were asked to review. So I think we do make an effort to get scientists. If we don't have the expertise in our panel, and even if we do, we try to get scientists with the most immediate knowledge, regardless of where they are, whether it's university, industry, or agencies, to provide input to the IMST. And we would like to always be open to information. We don't want to exclude any information from our decisions, because we want our advice to be the best advice we could possibly give the state on the technical basis for actions related to the Oregon Plan.
As I'm listening to the testimony, I come away with the feeling that you do try to abide by the open meetings law, a question that was raised. You have stated that you received non-member scientific reports, but you cannot share draft reports. Do you want to elucidate? I mean, I'm sure I'm looking at the list of scientists, and then you get the reviews. I'm sure until you have a final report, you're not all in agreement anyway. So
that's correct.
What would happen in the process if drafts were shared, do you think? I mean, just speculating.
I think that there would be the risk that the information and the discussions would be sharply constrained, that we wouldn't be as free to put information out there to be chewed up and beat up by fellow team members. Right now, it's a very vigorous process. Once we write anything, the fellow team members take each other to task. And you'd be very cautious if the draft materials were going out for public comment review. We count on that review process, but we record it. Once we're all together, it's a matter of public record and tape recorded, but we kind of take each other to task there. It would really constrain that. The other problem is, as we put together draft materials, quite often there are materials that we don't have ready access to, or we haven't had time to thoroughly digest, and so we put in a filler that kind of captures the gist of it, but it isn't as accurate as we want it to be in the final report. And if that material were to go out, it would appear that we didn't know what in the world we were doing, and I don't think that's really accurate. And so we would have to be cautious about what we put down on paper and put into a report. It would have to be close to the final version, but right now we use that as a working document to improve and synthesize, and we'd have to drop that function in the draft reports if it became publicly available. And the other thing I've noticed in public documents like that is they take on a life of their own. They're faxed around the state, they're quoted out of context, and suddenly, even if the final report says something different, what was said in that draft report lives on for years being quoted, and we're seeing that happening right now with the Klamath issue and NRC.
So have people got a hold of some drafts?
No, of the NRC interim report, the draft interim report by the National Research Council on the Klamath issue. There was a whole uproar, and we're still seeing quotes coming out of drafts of their interim report before their final report, which hasn't even come out.
I see.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
We face that constantly here. We draft a bill, it doesn't come out like we want. We're accused of doing all kinds of things, and those things live on forever. How do you differ from us? Why are you so important that you can't withstand that kind of stuff?
Senator Fisher, I wouldn't suggest that we're more important than the legislators. And I think our function is slightly different than your function. And we're being asked to review the body of scientific information to give advice to the state. And so we have to assemble that. And there has to be a process for us to synthesize that. We're a team. And so as we synthesize that, we have to have the chance to work on it without it being a matter of public discourse at that point in time, so we can work on it.
Let me ask a question at that point, and that is, people can watch you disagree with one another in your open meetings as you're discussing these things. They're just not looking at the drafts that you're working from.
Correct.
So in that sense, it is somewhat like the political arena. But you're not intended to legislate. It's not the rough and tumble legislative debate. You're supposed to be an independent, multidisciplinary team. And I notice that you come from Oregon State University, from the Department of Interior, from the University of Idaho, the College of Oceanic and Atmospheric Sciences, and so on. So right. You're supposed to be scientists that are supposed to be objectively looking at issues.
Correct.
And trying to give us advice, which we may pay attention to or may not pay attention to. Is that the idea?
Oh, that's correct, sir. We're and our meetings are public, and they're wide open, and we try to put out the announcements. Anyone that wants to be on our mailing list and so forth is sent a notice every meeting, and the agenda is specified, and we try to stick to the agenda so people aren't inconvenienced by traveling to the meeting and showing up, and then we're still engaged in some of the conversation. We really try to keep that. The tapes of the meetings are open, and so the information in our discussion and the nature of our information that we're dealing with and our interpretation of it is a matter of public record. It's just not a written record that gets distributed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Beyer has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doctor, I'm trying to find out which statute or which section of the Chapter 192.501 that exempts your draft material from the public meetings law. Could you point me to where your, I assume you have legal advice from someone that says that your draft material is exempt from the public records?
I can't point to that particular place in the statute. We worked with Louise Soliday and the Governor's Natural Resources Office in the last administration, and we sent our charter, and we gave our charter also to the legislator, to the joint the SR Square Committee, and for advice and comment. And so our comments about draft materials were in that charter, and we received no indication that that was a problem.
So our committee last session or last interim or
last
whenever
interim.
Or was it before that? Was it earlier than that? How long ago?
After the 97 session, I believe.
It was after the 97 session. I met last year with I'm not sure whether it was this committee or a different committee, and discussed our review process. It was last March, I think.
Was it Senator Messerly or
yes.
Farioli? Or?
Yes. Senator Messerly, I think it was a joint committee. Representative Jensen. Was there, and they did ask about the review. We explained our review process at that time to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And perhaps at some point in time, if we get into this further, Brendan could come down and give his opinion as legislative counsel. The only I can see, if you look at 192.501, sub 13 and sub 14, sub 13 says information developed pursuant to ORS 496.004, 496.172, and 498.026, or ORS 496.192 and 564.100 regarding the habitat, location, or population of any threatened species or endangered species. Perhaps that would be the chapter. I'm not sure. That the next one, sub 14, says writings prepared by or under the direction of a faculty of public educational institutions in connection with research until publicly released, copyrighted, or patented. Mm-hmm. So those are the only two chapter or subs of that chapter I can see that would perhaps qualify. That's why I'd like to get if there's something else. I don't know that if their work would be considered writings prepared by or under the direction of a faculty of a public education, because I don't think that's what IMST is.
Right. Mr. Chair, it certainly wouldn't be something that was going to be patented or or registered.
I think this is a discussion for getting legislative counsel down. I think there's certainly room for us to discuss this. That's why we're having a public hearing. I think that there's a more basic question, and I'm not looking at a law book like you are at the moment, but the basic question is, how independent do you want your independent multidisciplinary science team to be, in the sense that will they be constrained? We created them because we wanted an independent review of the plan. If all drafts are subject to cross-examination, even if they're half-baked ideas that they're throwing around early on, will that constrain their independence or won't it? I don't know. And so that's, you know, that's kind of the issue that's before us. We've got three or four issues here in front of us. I think OCAPA may even agree that, upon reflection, maybe they are meeting open meeting laws, need to, you know, try harder to make sure that they're out front with those and stuff like that. Make sure that they receive non-member scientific reports and so on. But this latter issue is kind of at the crux of what they do. We're just going to have to think that through. Go ahead,
and Mr. Chair. I guess
Senator Beyer.
As I read the letter from Brandon Closter, it specifically says there that he does not find statutory exemption in ORS 192501 or 2505 that would allow the IMST to restrict access to its public records. So apparently, he doesn't agree with whatever counsel they got when they received wrote their charter.
And apparently we didn't pick up on that in previous legislative reviews either.
Apparently not.
As I mean, I have been part of the interim committees over these last few years, and I certainly haven't picked up on it. The one thing that I'm wanting to say, and I think everybody, OCAPA included, would agree, is that we don't want to, in the process of trying to make this work better, stop it from doing what we created it to do in the first place. You know.
Senator Shields, could I make one brief comment? I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, and I guess I would just like to emphasize that IMST would be glad to take any information on the legislative material and the legalities of the open meetings law. And consider that. I have not had a chance to go through that, and so I can't give you specifics at this moment, but I'd be glad to in the future. And we would be glad, we do continue to work with the state. We consider ourselves serving the state, and we'll work with the legislature and the governor's office to make sure that our processes are that is both legal and appropriate and leads to the best product for the state. So we'll be glad to keep working with you all on this.
I don't think we can complain about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate your time, and we're going to let you get back to that class a few minutes ahead of your schedule, so you won't have to speed from here to Corvallis and all that stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Are there some more folks that would like... Come on up. Don't have you on my list, but we'll have at it here for a few seconds. Could you identify yourself for the record?
Yes. My name is Richard Shepherd. I have a PhD in river ecology and fluvio geomorphology. I've been a private consultant for the last 10 years.
I can't even say that. What is it again?
River ecology and fluvio geomorphology.
Okay.
Which is the study of the structure and function, physical structure and function of stream and river ecosystems. How they change and how they react to certain events. And actually, Stan and I go back almost 30 years. We were graduate students here at OSU and I at Idaho State University and all part of the Western Stream Team. And I attended a couple of the IMST meetings last year. While technically we were invited to make comments, there was nothing substantive about which we could make a comment because we didn't have any of the material to review ahead of time. I had reviewed the draft gravel study done by the Water Resource Research Institute at OSU back in 1994 and provided comments on that through DSO before it was turned into a final report. I've not had the opportunity to do this with any of the IMST work, and so stepping up and making a comment on items that I've been kept from learning is really rather futile. There's nothing useful I can say or anything I could contribute in a positive way about that. So I think that it would be, and regardless of contention, I have to say that, and the salmon issues certainly are contentious environmentally, economically, and many other ways. And personally, and as a scientist, I think it would benefit from accepting all opinions and bringing all the discussion out, because there is no one fixed answer. And if you are independent from any internal agenda or independent from any particular viewpoint, and you're looking at this objectively, I would think you would want to have as many different views brought up to be considered and talked about. And then when you make a decision, you can say, well, we've looked at everything, and here's the basis for our decision. And there, I don't see any problem with having this in an open forum.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
I'm trying to think it through from the team's perspective. It makes sense to me that possibly you can tweak this kind of somewhere in the middle. And that is, I heard him say that with regard to the Klamath, they had put it out, 20-some different people were reviewing, you know, they were various scientists and various experts and so on. With regard to this, in retrospect, maybe what they should have done is had you from OCAPA, but a scientist, as one of the technical reviewers. Now, that's a step in between opening it up so every journalist, every muckraker, what, excuse the pun, coming to think of rivers, and never mind. But, you know, rather than have everybody commenting on it, make sure that all the stakeholders, pro or con,
right,
that have scientific expertise to bring to bear are consulted. You know what I'm saying? Or at least, it sounds to me like you don't have to open it to the whole universe, where you'd have a lot of non-experts that could add more heat than light, but you should be, in a sense, required to share it both with the proponents and the opponents of whatever perspective. You follow what I'm saying?
I follow what you're saying, Mr. Chair, and before you do a comment, I guess a potential negative to that would be criticism could arise, saying that people who don't get a review, say the IMST is handpicking the people they want to get the opinions from.
Yeah, and I'm saying that in legislation, maybe we could require that anybody who can demonstrate that they're a stakeholder with some scientific expertise, and I realize those are words that you can fudge around a lot, and wouldn't legislative counsel love to define some of what we're talking about conceptually, but you can get past that problem. That's a halfway step, but it gets everybody's input if they're a stakeholder without, you know, opening it up.
Without putting it on the World Wide Web.
Yeah. And you know what I'm saying. I wouldn't be able to add much light, but if I was of the mind to, I could add a heck of a lot of heat by saying something that might be totally outrageous and not stand up to any scientific scrutiny, but it gets out there and becomes currency. And in our society, we love to get distracted.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, go ahead. Senator Fisher.
You're going all around the thing to just restate the problem. It's time we took a solid day holiday, to use some of your word semantics here, and got this stuff out in the open and let people know what's going on, because we've been having the benefit of all this garbage that you're just talking about here coming into play, and that's the reason for the problems we've had right now. If they put this out in the open, if these people can't defend a position and they don't want to put something out, don't let them get buffaloed if that's the way they want to be. It's no problem with getting out there. There's no reason why the people that are trying to work something out can't have access and input into the same things that everybody else is getting access and input into.
But
it doesn't make any sense.
What I'm saying is they don't have a position yet at the point that they're discussing a draft and still arguing with themselves. And when they don't have a position, submitting it to somebody like this gentleman, who may have a very different perspective, that would be of a lot of help.
At least it allows everybody to find out where everybody else is coming from, and if they can't stand the heat, let them get out of the fire.
Well, we're the ones that asked them to do this work, I imagine a whole lot of them might be very happy to just go back and teach their university classes and not step up to the fire. You know, we have to be careful what we ask for.
Senator, if I may, that's exactly what this bill is asking, is that those non-member scientists, those stakeholders or stakeholder experts be brought into the process when appropriate.
Right.
And not for more.
Yeah, right.
And I have difficulty seeing where keeping discussions closed ensures better results or credentials for the people involved. If what you're talking about, and these are very contentious issues, if they're all brought out, and even sometimes when there's more heat than light, if you're able to show that it doesn't shed a lot of light on it and do that objectively, I think the final position is a lot stronger.
Well, I appreciate what you're sharing this morning. This has been a very enlightening hearing. I don't see anybody else on the list to comment.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your coming. I think we've had a good discussion of it. We'll consider this. With that, I want to close the hearing on Senate Bill 576. Would it be okay with you guys if I do these tap-taps just real quick?
Sure. Well, it's not quite 9:50 yet.
Oh, it's not quite 9:50, so I can't do the tap-taps yet. So let's go to the other one. 2533A, is that what we're doing? I'll open a public hearing on 2533A. Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 2533A comes at the request of the Northwest Propane Gas Association and the Pacific Northwest Paint Council. It did pass the House floor with a unanimous vote of 58-0. The measure exempts propane produced by a process other than refining crude oil and for non-vehicle use from payment of part of the fees for the possession of hazardous substances. Mr. Chair, you also have, and members, you have a fiscal statement that has been issued on the measure. Restating that this bill, in fact, would exempt some propane storage facilities from paying the fee that funds the toxic use reduction fee. The total estimated loss in revenue from this bill would be $62,329 per year beginning in January 2004. The fiscal office indicates that DEQ would either have to increase the fee schedules for those still required to pay the fees to recoup the lost revenue or, in fact, reduce program services to match the revenue reduction. And we also have a non-revenue impact statement, which means it simply does not affect taxes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith. I'm going to ask both Representative Greenlick and Lana Butterfield to come up at the same time. This went through the House, had a work group, lots of work done, and as was just stated, passed 58-0, and so I'm kind of hoping we can get through this without too much time. And gee whiz, we might even have a whole committee for this.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Representative Mitch Greenlick of House District 33. I'm here today with the permission, or the encouragement even, of the chair of the House Environment and Land Use Committee, and I chaired the work group that got this particular solution, so I thought I would stop and talk about the process a bit before I go back to House Transportation and settle the motorcycle helmet problem.
That's using your hair.
This,
I did that to you, Tom.
Where's my
this, this bill, in the current form you have it, is quite different than the bill that came to us, which really talked about the whole question of the Toxic Use Reduction Program, the Community Right to Know Program, and the Orphan Sites Program, three programs which are funded by a complex set of fees on the extent to which industries or companies keep what might be called hazardous materials. The testimony to the committee made very clear that it really was time for a relook at the whole question of how these three programs work, how the fees come to be collected, and a variety of things. But the committee felt that there was a short-term problem here that presaged this whole question of how to relook at the three programs and the fees that support them. And a task group was put together that included the American Electronics Institute, the Associated Oregon Industries, the Northwest Propane Council, the Western States Petroleum Group, the Oregon Environmental Council, the City of Eugene, the DEQ, and the Fire Marshal, who joined and provided us some data. And in that work group, we came to three conclusions. One was that DEQ needed to do an interim task force with these people to look at these three programs, that the fire marshal needed to put together interim work to talk about the fee schedules, and the fire marshal's in charge of collecting the fees, and they both agreed to do that and committed, and all the parties in the room committed to helping that effort in the interim without the aid of a bill. So we solved that problem. The immediate question left was the fact that propane holders seem to be paying an unusually high proportion of the toxic use reduction fee, since propane really wasn't a toxic use. And in aid of dealing with that, all the parties, the other parties who pay the fee, agreed it made sense to exempt propane holders from that one piece of the fee, the toxic use reduction fee, and they all agreed that it would be no problem for the fees on the rest of them to be increased. And the deal was that the fire marshal, in collecting the fees, would keep the same amount of fees collected, but it would amount to about a 2% increase in fees, which is a relatively small amount, since this is only one of three components of the fees that are collected for these three programs. So the revenue impact, in fact, is zero. All the parties seem to think this is adequate. They think the whole system is screwy to begin with, and doing this doesn't make it any less screwy or any more screwy to them, and they all agreed that this was a useful solution. So the amendments, the bill as amended that you have before us, deals specifically with the question of the exemption of the propane holders from one piece of the complex fee schedule, the toxic use reduction, which is about $60,000, and Intel's representative and others felt getting a 2% increase on their share of this was not going to affect their ability to create jobs in Oregon and to move forward until we have the whole thing straightened out. So that's my report here. I'd be happy to answer any questions if I could, and Ms. Butterfield will talk about it with substance, and I'll go back to work.
Okay. Thank you very much. I don't think there are questions at this point. This is fairly straightforward. Thank you for the work that you did in that work group. Like an entertaining place to be.
It took one session and one half a session. There were very good participants.
Thank you. Lana, would you like to hold forth for a few minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lana Butterfield. I'm representing the Northwest Propane Gas Association. Representative Greenlich did a really good job of presenting this bill. The propane folks would like to ask you to pass it. We've been 18% of the facilities billed have been billed on propane, and we pay 13% of the fee, and yet we do not directly benefit from any of the technical assistance that is offered by the Toxic Use Reduction Program. I'd like to conclude by saying thank you to Representative Greenlich and to the members of the work group. I'm very grateful to them for recognizing the validity of our concerns. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there questions? If there's no questions, I'd like to close the hearing on House Bill 2533A and open a work session on House Bill 2533A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2533A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves House Bill 2533A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Well, let's have a vote then, okay? Would the clerk call the roll on this bill?
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. The motion, having received a majority, has passed the floor. Somebody want to carry this bill? Senator Beyer will carry the bill. We have to do what we can to get you into the lead in carrying bills on the floor.
I think Senator Beyer would be very good at passing gas bills, sir.
I knew that was coming. I should have covered you. We knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, it'll happen on the floor.
All right. What we're going to do is I need to say this to all of you. I met yesterday with Senator Hannon and Senator Courtney in a meeting.
Get Friday off.
And we have authority to have four what you would call tap-taps. So I'm going to open a hearing on this kind of bill. And I think what I'd like you to do is just read, you know, the catch line or whatever from each of them. Can you do that for us?
Certainly.
So that's on the record. So I'll open a Senate hearing on Senate Bill 594.
Senate Bill 594 creates a task force on land conservation programs.
Okay, and I'm going to close a hearing on Senate Bill 594. And I'm going to open a Senate hearing on Senate Bill 595.
Senate Bill 595 creates a task force on federal forest programs.
And I'm if you don't speak as fast as James.
And I'm going to close a hearing on Senate Bill 595. I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 597.
Senate Bill 597 requires a person to hold a shellfish license in order to take shellfish.
Any discussion?
Nope.
I'm going to close a hearing on Senate Bill 597. And I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 674.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 674 repeals the petition and referendum statutes pertaining to the Oregon Beef Council.
Anybody have a beef with that?
No.
Boo.
Huh? We had a hearing on that one the other day, didn't we?
No, not actually.
We never got to it.
We never got to it. So, and with that, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 674. And given that we've had lots of fun this morning, we're going to adjourn the committee.
Bill done. Get done.